Those are strange words, aren't they? This is probably the strangest book in the Bible in many ways. So let me start with a strange, but I think a rather enjoyable story of the man who, having a very jealous streak, began to doubt whether his wife was being faithful to him. So he devised a plan that one day he'd pretend to go off to work, would just wait nearby and then rush back into their third floor flat where he and his wife lived and confirm his worst suspicions. So on the morning he'd worked out, it's precisely what he did. He said goodbye, kissed her goodbye, walked out of the flat, waited around the corner, counted to 100, dashed back in, raced upstairs, burst into the room, saw his wife looking out of the window over the balcony, thought he caught the whiff of cigarette smoke, and as he glanced out of the window, he saw a man climbing into a white sports car, clutching a bunch of flowers. In a fit of rage, he ripped the fridge from its socket, threw it through the window, down over the balcony onto the man, and the exertion of doing that was too much for him. He had a heart attack and died. So imagine that the change of scene. You're at the gates of heaven, and as the jealous husband turns up, Peter says to him, "What happened to you?" He said, "Well, I've always had this insane jealousy," he confessed, "and rather foolishly, suspecting my wife of being unfaithful, I picked up a fridge to throw at the fellow, and it was just too much for me, and here I am." "All right," said Peter, "well, just wait over there, would you?" Next came a man with a big bandage wrapped round his head, limping on crutches, battered and bruised. And Peter said, "What happened to you?" He said, "You won't believe this, but," he said, "it was the funniest thing. There I was on the way to work, and I thought I'd be nice to surprise my wife by nipping into the corner shop to buy her some flowers. And as I was getting into my car, I heard this whistling sound and looked up, and there was this giant fridge coming down to land on top of me." "Oh," said Peter, well, you better just wait over there." And then appeared another fellow looking very sheepish. "And what's your story?" said Peter. "Well," said the man, "I was hiding in this fridge." And if you want to know what the moral of the story is, it is, I guess, that you can never be too sure how things will turn out. But it's the sort of story that the teacher who wrote this book, Ecclesiastes, you feel it was made for him, really. You know, the jealous husband, the innocent passerby, the guilty adulterer, they all end up dead. No wonder he thinks meaningless, meaningless, everything's meaningless. That's his catchphrase throughout the book. And if you've been with us in the series earlier, as he's looked at life under the sun, as he speaks about it, in the here and now, as if that's all there is, you wonder sometimes why he bothered to get out of bed in the morning. Life seemed empty, death inevitable, and any ace you've got up your sleeve will be trumped by one of those certainties. And now here he is in this passage saying, in effect, go for it. You know, the mood swing seems remarkable. The antidepressants are certainly effective, and you kind of wonder what's going on. Well, he's not suddenly abandoned all his research and become a starry-eyed romantic. His catchphrase still remains, meaningless, meaningless. If you're just going to take life in the here and now, that's all he can make of it. But this is more than just a grudging, "Well, I suppose you might as well go for it." This is his conclusion. It's an agnostic's advice, not because he's agnostic about God. Please don't think that for a moment. He's never been a don't know when it comes to God. He speaks of God here as the maker, and just a few lines further on as God as the judge. Now, our teacher doesn't actually believe that life is limited to the here and now. His God breaks that envelope at both ends. But he's also one of those teachers who feels, you know, leaves even the Christian believer feeling a bit edgy. I mean, go for it can sound very threatening, can't it? But he's writing to human beings, believer or not. And go for it, it's not sort of license for immorality, it's just wisdom for life. That's what he's agnostic about, by the way. What life is going to deliver for you next. Even as a God believer, he doesn't know what it'll throw at us. There is lots of life we can't predict or even explain in the here and now. I mean, that's true for all of us, isn't it? And still he says, go for it. Go for it. Let me spell it out as we come to look at our passage. You see, he begins by saying, it's wise to gamble. No, he's not talking about the lottery. That's a fool's game. He's not talking about betting at all, actually, just the mindset that, waits for life to be risk-free before it does anything. He says that's the way to miss out on life. So you see how he begins, cast your bread upon the waters. Now, don't imagine the rustic scene, you're by the pond with the ducks. It's not that kind of stuff. This is a picture from trade. Cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you'll find it again. King Solomon's shipping fleet put to sea every 3 years. So business then, just as actually business now, in spite of all the shortcuts people try and take, business then and now, it's still a matter of investing now and then waiting for the return. And here's the encouragement to do that with life. I mean, when it comes to life, he's a giver, not a clutcher. Do it generously. Do it liberally. Give portions to seven, yes to eight. And again, these aren't precise figures. Don't start counting on your fingers. This isn't statistics. This is Proverbs. This is for the suspicious safety first people whose lives run on that very narrow, blinkered front that just hoards. Their motto is get all you can all you get, and sit on the can. They'll give you the next line of verse 2, of course, all right? You don't know what disaster may come upon the land, and you don't. We don't today, do we? I mean, we used to be worried about banks closing, Northern Rock or Lehman Brothers. Now it's sovereign debt. The stock market, I mean, hands up if you can tell me what it's going to do tomorrow. No one has the foggiest clue, do we? And it's no good putting it all in a sock under the mattress because the home could get burgled. I mean, there is no risk-free way of getting through life. I don't know what happened. No, too true. So go for it. Give portions to seven or to eight, he says. Be as generous as you can while you can. That is wise advice, because you don't know what disaster. Our teacher knows only too well it can strike any human being, believer or not. The Christian's got no immunity from job loss, the dreaded X-ray result, children who mess up, parents who don't grow old gracefully. Life's uncertain. Right? Even in the Church of England, the pensions are struggling. I gather that vicars live longer than any other profession. Bad news if you run the pension fund. We actually do so little while we're working that by the time we come to retire, we can still put up the as new sign, but that's how it goes. On the other hand, you don't know what disaster may come. I shouldn't count on an enormous length of life. So go for it while I can. That's what he's saying. That's wise advice. And actually, years after this teacher has come the great teacher. And he would say the same kind of thing, aware of all the dangers. Here's some words that the teacher, Jesus, said. He said, whoever wants to save his life will lose it. You see, get all you can all you get? I don't know. He says, whoever loses his life for me and the gospel will save it. I don't know if there'll be someone here hovering on the edge of commitment to Jesus. He knows it feels like losing your life. And he says, go for it. That's the way to save it. I think of Graham. He was a very talented sportsman I used to play hockey with. And we talked a little bit about Christian things. And he came to me one day and he said this as he'd thought it through. This was his considered verdict at the end. He said, Hugh, I know all this stuff about Jesus is true. I do believe he is the Son of God. But he said, Hugh, and he just made it into the team, and he'd made all his friends. He said, I can't risk losing my friends. It's not for me. It's not for me. It looked as if to follow Jesus would be losing his life. Actually, it's the thing that would have saved it. but he turned his back. Whoever loses his life for me and the gospel will save it. I don't know if there's some who are just hesitating because of the cost of going on following Jesus. You know, someone for whom you fear it may cost you your job if you keep your Christian integrity and show it. Others for whom it might cost family or friends if they own Jesus. Feels like losing life. You save it. Go for it. Go for it. It's wise advice. Here's the second way he puts it. Similar kind of theme. As we come back to our little passage, it's no good sitting on the fence. You know the kind of people who live life in the world of what might be, or really what might have been. Actually, some of them hardly live life at all, do they? It rarely gets beyond their mind or their talk. You know, I might have been this. We could have done that. If only the other hadn't happened. Yeah, the mindset, it guarantees inaction if you're not careful for the future. To live, you know, only when all the things sort of sorted out and the way forward's guaranteed. Well, our teacher here in this strange book, he lives in the real world, and the real world contains certainties that are beyond our control. So you see how he goes on in verse 3. If clouds are full of water, they pour rain upon the earth. I mean, it's not sort of stunning science, is it? It's kind of what happens. You know, it will rain if the clouds are full of water. The only question is where and when, and normally fairly regularly in this country. And then here's one of my favorite lines in the whole of the Bible, really. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there it will lie. Yeah, you hadn't thought you were going to learn that at lunch today, did you? See, you'd be amazed what you get. And there's no point in moaning if only it had fallen the other way. Oh, if only it had just been a few more feet that way, I could have got round it. Now, where it falls, it lies. Here's something to take your breath away. Trees don't crawl. Okay? I mean, that's where they stop. And the real world contains certainties beyond our control. I mean, we can't really determine when and where trees fall, but we can't do anything about them. But some people live for years, even decades, don't they, with their life simply blocked by the tree that fell across their path. You know, that the bad luck that I suffered at school, that the rough justice I got in my first job, that the misfortune that our family's been through. And life gets left on a permanent hold as those take over. As if it can't be lived until the tree crawls away. Well, it's not going to. It's not going to. There are always uncertainties about life we can't control. And they can leave us missing out on life as well. See, look, verse 4. Whoever watches the wind will not plant. Whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. It's as if our teacher here understands British weather, doesn't he? You know, that every morning you've got to get up and you've got no real clue what's going to happen. If you're going to spend all the time waiting till you can be absolutely sure it will be dry and there won't be a spot of rain, I mean, when will you ever get on with anything? I think that's the spirit of it. The kind of uncertainty that breeds hesitancy. I don't know whether. But to spend your life sitting on the fence is to miss out on life. Don't wait for the weather to change. Don't wait for the kids to grow up, the promotion to be in the bag, the this task to be finished, and then you will. Don't wait for conditions to be perfect and risk-free before you climb off the fence and live. Well, again, the teacher Jesus made the same point. He said this about himself: he who is not with me is against me. See, whether you're someone who knows it all already, whether you're someone for whom it's just something, you know, lurking in the background, whether you're just stepping out to explore it, know this, there's no neutrality when it comes to Christ. No good thinking that you'll sit on the fence. In the end, those are the ones who get hurt most. Frightened of commitment? Worried what it might bring, or always waiting for a better moment? I think we can understand all of those thoughts. But go for it. Go for it. See, God's brought you here for a reason this lunchtime. And it's not just down to that pushy colleague of yours who kind of dragooned you here, or the charming friend, whichever they happen to be. And it wasn't just for a fun lunch and a break from the office. It was to remind you of the Jesus who came into this world, who lived and died to rescue us from the many dead ends we back ourselves into. And to remind us that this Jesus needs a response. And it has to be more than a shrug. More than a patronizing nod, more than I don't want to offend. Now go for it, he says. And if you say to me, well, I don't really know what the it is yet. Well, that's exactly what this whole Christianity Explored course and opportunity is all about, a chance to find out. Chance to start climbing off the fence and going for it.